I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. Today, I am happy to welcome Michael Vamasi. He is chief creative officer and co-founder at Fathom. And we're going to talk all about the launch of Fathom, which just happened in the past month or so. Welcome, Michael. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Paige. It's great to be here. Really appreciate it.
Michael, you sound great. I'm so happy with the sound quality.
Oh, that's good.
All right. So Fathom is a new creative agency, and it's located, it's sort of a division of Smith Geiger, but why don't you explain all of that to us? What is Fathom? What's its relationship with Smith Geiger? Just sort of start with the catalyst of all that.
Sure thing. Yeah. Fathom is a new 360 creative agency. We are a division of Smith Geiger. We will have our own offices once everything kind of clears up from, the COVID crisis. But we really kind of can operate independently, and we operate, in conjunction with. So meaning, we can offer our clients from the creative side, data and insights and strategy, teaming up with Smith Geiger. And same thing, we can offer creative services to the Smith Geiger clients. As an extension of their services for the past 20 years. I have clients who come to me and they say, we have our own data team. Is that okay? And we say, that's fine. We're able to offer them, the robust creative services, independently as well. Mm-hmm. So it's really kind of the best mix of both worlds. We've got the support from Smith Geiger in every way. We've got the advisory council from Smith Geiger, and Seth and Dave are extremely, smart, experienced people that we really rely on. And it really helps guide us when we think about the projects that we tap into for our clients.
So can you explain? I've covered a lot of things that Smith Geiger does, but I don't know that I could explain what exactly Smith Geiger is or what it's the services that it offers. So can you explain that a little bit and how you think what they offer works in concert with what you do as a creative?
Definitely. From my point of view, I've always loved to have, the data and research when you jump into a creative project. It's always been nice to kind of have, a little context, behind the creative. It really kind of helps us to justify some choices that people may think are otherwise, subjective or creative choice. But really, it kind of helps just set the guardrails, data-driven design, data-driven creative is really kind of a nice path to follow. I met Seth Geiger on a project for a media client. It was a large client, large project. And this involved us going to 5 different markets and doing some focus groups and some other types of testing. What we did was really kind of teamed up nicely with Seth and the rest of the team over there. We would go into a market with our creative. We would get a lot of responses back. And Seth just had this really amazing way of kind of summing up everything that we just saw in a whole day of focus groups and a whole day of eye tracking and a whole day of, other tests that we were kind of doing. And we would sit down and we would talk about it. And then we'd make a plan and we'd go back and we'd improve our creative and we'd go to the next market. And we, do the same thing. We get some results, we go back and tweak. We get some results, go back and tweak. And by the time we were getting into our 4th and our 5th market, you could really kind of see that everyone was gelling, that the creative was starting to really get pinpointed. The respondents in these rooms were really kind of giving us some great reactions. The client really felt like we were headed in the right direction, with the robust team that they were kind of involved with. And it was really kind of a great, environment where my creative team, and Seth and his team and the client all kind of working together to really kind of figure out what's going to be the best solution. And it was really a kind of a great process. And that's one of the things that I thought, was a great way to kind of show how data and creative really kind of work together in a way that's collaborative. And it's really kind of fun when you get down to it. Not that a focus group for 12 hours is exciting, but the end result and the way that we kind of were able to shape and shift, all of the guidance was really amazing and put us on the path for success.
Okay, this is a question I always have, and I recognize that you probably aren't going to be able to really answer it, but I always wonder if you are an agency working for a client and you're providing data, how do you generate that data if you are not the client? Meaning, how do you have access to the way things perform, or if it's like Nielsen, you can get Nielsen numbers, but I just always wonder, how do you get the data that you need to see how your creative is doing?
Well, that's a great It's a great point. Like for Smith Geiger, what they do is they really kind of, you know, take a look at what the client needs are. They dive deep and they figure out, okay, what are you wondering? You know, you kind of said that word wonder, and, you know, Seth and Dave use that word a lot when you think about like, our clients are wondering this, or they're wondering that, or they're wondering is the creative on point, or, you know, are the viewers going to respond to this in a positive light? And what they do is they kind of set up, you know, different models of, research to kind of, you know, bring people in, ask questions, or set up, you know, online conversations with people. They kind of craft questions to align with some of the responses. You know, they find great respondents, these people who are in the target in the market that we need, and they cast a wide enough net to really kind of get a nice robust sampling. These guys do their magic where they really kind of like look at the statistics and how people are answering and the numbers and how they kind of, you know, pull it together, between their quantitative and qualitative research and the way that they kind of really start to focus what the viewers, you know, or your consumers are going to think when you kind of go out with a product or a launch or a campaign, you know, how you can really kind of anticipate what the market's going to hold. And really what they're doing is they're doing great groundwork for us to kind of just move in behind and follow creatively. And then you can also test that creative. And that was the benefit for us on this project that I was telling you about that I can't initially get into a lot of the details, but we actually did some eye tracking too.
Oh, wow.
We started to put a lot of, you know, graphic information and some graphic systems into play, and we wanted to kind of test the viability. And that's when Smith Geiger was like, let's do some eye tracking. And it was really interesting to see that, not only asking people, hey, where are you looking? You can scientifically see and you can track their eye movement. So you can see where, you know, all of the respondents start to kind of add up. You add up those numbers, and you might get a couple people that are, you know, a little bit on their own, and they look here, or they look there. But the core audience, and that's what you're kind of looking at when Smith Geiger can kind of tell you that you know, most of the people are looking here. They're looking where we want them to be looking. We're not overloading the screen. We want to make sure that we're guiding the story. We're supporting with the graphics, and we're keeping people connected while we're really advancing some graphic systems. That eye tracking, you know, test that they kind of developed and put into play was really, really interesting and really informative to me and my team at the time. So it was a great benefit. We learned a lot from it. And that's the thing that they do with Smith Geiger is, yes, they have their, you know, their approaches to this. But when you have these unique circumstances, you know, to really kind of dive into finding out different levels of the way people think and the way they respond, you know, they will find new ways to kind of do that. And that eye tracking was really helpful.
So when you say, this is another question again, pretend like you're speaking to a very dumb person and then answer. So when you are talking about qualitative versus quantitative, so qualitative would be more like focus groups, surveys, things that bring up sort of subjective takes, or quantitative would be more like looking at Facebook engagement or something like that.
Well, it's a combination of all of those things. Yeah. In this particular case, the project that we were working on with Smith Geiger, we kind of sat down with people one-on-one. And you dove deep, you know, really kind of getting an understanding to ask them questions one-on-one. You know, these guys developed some great questions. We're also there behind the two-way mirror, able to kind of, you know, throw in a couple additional questions based on who the respondents were and what their reactions were to some of the stuff that we were testing. So you're able to kind of in the middle of the testing, able to kind of react to it and ask some additional questions. And Seth and his team always had some great follow-up questions to the way some of these one-on-one interviews went. So they would do these one-on-one interviews, and then they would also go to larger groups where you would pull in a lot of people from a lot of different walks of life and, you know, different backgrounds, and you would have this discussion and really working with Smith Geiger and their moderators to kind of making sure that you're able to push the agenda forward while you're creating this interesting dynamic conversation that instantly responds to the creative that you're throwing out there. It was really intriguing for me and my team to see people who didn't know who was doing this or making this. It wasn't like they were going to hurt our feelings if they said they didn't like something or didn't, you know, respond well to this or that, or they had issues with something else. But to see like the energy of the team kind of, you know, when you had the larger groups in there kind of starting to work things out in the room, trying to solve our problems for us, was really interesting. So you get a lot of different kinds of responses in that case. And the great thing was we cast a very wide net, and, you know, we went into 5 different markets, you know, and really kind of looked at each level to pinpoint what it was about that creative and how it was going to work when it eventually hits market. And I think that's what you want, right? You want the creative, you know, innovation, and then you want that assurance that, hey, this is going to work. And I think that's what really kind of drew me to taking, you know, the creative agency model in a new space, in a new way, and redesign that kind of, you know, a model and bring it and team it up with the firepower of a Smith Geiger.
How, as a creative, how have you felt about having, it's not like data dictates the creative, I don't think, but just having, have you gotten to the place where it sounds like that you're okay with data coming in and forming the creative? Were you ever resistant to that? Did you ever have to overcome that?
Well, I think there's always that case, right? Like, you know, I've been on the network side a couple times, and, you know, sometimes you kind of have this feeling with research is coming to you with this ulterior motive. And you're like, well, what are you guys trying to really do? What are you guys really trying to get across? And honestly, the more I sat down with a lot of the research folks, you know, from FX and Fox and Starz, you know, I really got a deep understanding of where they were coming from. And it wasn't like you were like, oh, do exactly like they're saying. It's like, no, here's the research. Here's a perfect example. Like when I was working on Glee, developing the campaign for Glee while at Fox, you know, I looked at the research, and the research said that 70% of people had a horrible experience at high school. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. You know what? I can't really relate to that because I enjoyed high school, but I get it. And I went, you know what? Instead of just avoiding high school altogether, I went at it head on. And I was like, you know what? 70% of people didn't have a great experience. So you know what? I'm going to bully these guys. And we did GL loser sign for the L in Glee.
I remember this.
That became the campaign. And it was one of those things that was like, no. Like, this is going to work. And I remember going into the room and pitching this in front of the entire kind of senior staff and watching the senior staff just explode. Right? Well, we can't do this. We can't call our best new show a bunch of losers. We can't, you know, we that's mean. That's bullying. That's negative advertising. This will never work. And Peter Liguori, you know, great mentor and a great president at the time, just kind of crossed his arms, leaned back. The room went silent. And he goes, you know what? I see what you're doing. It's great. You're going to make all of these people love these guys because we're teasing them. You're going to endear them to us. And that's what we did. And like, you know, you took that little nugget from the data and the research that said, you know, 70% of people didn't like high school. And we used that negative, and we turned that negative into a positive. And that little, you know, that loser symbol really became kind of the calling card for that series. And it was a great kind of way to kind of say, you know what? Yeah, we kind of went against the data a little bit, but we really used it in a fun way. And it was a fun creative campaign, and we got a lot of reaction from that.
Yeah, I remember that campaign very well. And I was also remembering the milkshake in the face. Was that also part of that campaign?
Yeah, well, you know, that really kind of came from the series too. Ryan Murphy's got a great show there with Glee, and you know, they were throwing slushies at all the Glee kids in class, and we definitely picked up on that, and we did a lot of that in our marketing. Season 2 really kind of banked on, you know, everyone getting slushied, you know, in the photo shoots, live action for shoots. So it was definitely a lot of fun to shoot that while we're throwing slushies at people and throwing slushies at plexiglass behind camera. So
that is an excellent example too. And thank you. I really appreciate examples, and I find it very hard for people to come up with. So that is awesome. Thank you very much. All right.
I mean,
so
yeah, got it.
One thing you mentioned is that Fathom is a 360 agency. You know, people, that's a term I think that gets thrown around a lot, but can you talk about what that means for Fathom and what that means for your clients?
Yeah. I mean, really what it means is, you know, it's not like you're going to just do one thing anymore. You know, if clients come to us and say, hey, we just need a graphics package, or we just need a main title for a show, you have to kind of think big picture, whether they ask for it or not. You've got to think about ways that elements or campaign one-offs, or if you're doing just, you know, an AV piece, you know, how does that AV piece live on air? Or if you're doing print, how does that print come to life in a digital or a mobile use? And how do you kind of start to combine these elements to really kind of think about it in a big picture? it's not like it used to be where, you know, okay, the print department's doing their thing, On Air Graphics are doing their thing, and On Air Promo is going to do their thing, and we're all hitting different needs and deliverables. You really kind of have to go at it by thinking of what's the creative idea, and then how does that trickle down to every single touch point, whether it's outdoor, whether it's a print ad, whether it's the digital and social extensions of that. How do you move that key art? How does that key art intrigue you enough while it's moving to make you want to click on some video and extend it? Or how does that key art move to where it's a 30-second story that ends into the key art? So there's a lot of different ways to do it, and it doesn't all have to line up uniformed or perfect, but you definitely need to kind of make sure that you're creating this idea, this concept, that this kind of approach to a campaign that has legs, that can execute and have multiple assets working in unison across multiple platforms. So you really have to make sure you're thinking 360. You're not just thinking about the one-off element that the client might be asking you to do. You want to kind of, you know, let everyone know that there's more than just what you're working on. There's a bigger use for it. There's more of an extension to it if we need to expand to that direction based on media or based on client needs or wherever else they need to kind of get to get success.
In today's landscape, how often does it happen that a client would ask you for just one asset like key art or main title? And B, how often does it happen that if they ask for just one asset or some kind of limited package that it ends up expanding once they realize their needs?
That's the thing, right? Like you ask for a one-off, and we get those, you know, get those asked all the time. And then it's like, oh, we love this. This is great. How else could we use this? You know, we did a really cool, interesting piece for Better Call Saul where we kind of took all of this great typography. We had it all falling back into place as you're hearing these great sound bites. And that series was, you know, extremely well written. And, you know, we had some great ideas where when you hear this, these great bites from the show, that you're seeing this type, and this type falls back, and you hear another layered sound bite, and all this type starts to fall back.
I know this campaign. Yeah.
And it turns out to be, you know, Saul's face that it makes up in this cool little dot pattern of all these great lines. That, you know, as we started to get into it, the client's like, wow, this could make some great key art. This could make for some great digital. We can use extensions for this, something we really didn't think of in the onset. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that one-off piece, you know. And we did some other stuff for AMC where they had their key art, and we did some pretty amazing kind of extensions for a graphic spot that really kind of brought that to life in a cool teaser campaign. They had this upside down chapel, you know, with this kind of red burning
preacher
sky. We kind of created a whole front story that took you to that end position. So there's a lot of different ways to kind of extend great ideas and finding the way to kind of execute that.
The preacher campaign, side note, that preacher campaign was really cool. And it's not, I think preacher is done now, but I felt like that was an example where the marketing led the show. The marketing was great. You know what I mean?
Like we did a couple pieces for that. You know, we did a couple pieces for them for that. And, you know, we didn't do their key art, and then they did a couple other pieces, and those guys did a good job of kind of pulling it all together. And they really made that series look cool and amazing and in a rich landscape. But yeah, I mean, it was fun to work on it. It was definitely a cool vibe, and had a lot of fun making some
It was
pieces.
A really cool vibe. You wisely decided to launch a creative agency during a pandemic. How's that been?
You know, I was talking to a good friend and a mentor, John Varby, who used to, you know, head up On Air Promotions for FX. And, you know, I always talk to John and get some great advice from him. And, you know, we used to work together on the agency side, and we worked together at FX. And, you know, he looked at me and said, wow, you picked a great time to launch an agency.
Great time. I don't know.
You know, if not now, then when? You know, so I looked at it, and it was funny too, because you know, getting a lot of advice from him, and then kind of talking about like, well, you know what, you capitalize on where you are in the time, right? There's also this kind of like almost leveling of the playing field. I had a client say, "Great, I'd love to work with you. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd love to see the presentation. We just want to make sure you're not a couple of guys in a garage." I was like,
you're like, we're all a couple guys in a grad. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone's working from their living room or from their den or their tree fort. And you've got this kind
their
of
tree fort.
Sense of, yeah, you're just doing it, right? You know, people got edit bays at home and they're working, you know, and we're doing that too. And in one sense, it's kind of like helped us, you know, we don't necessarily need like the 15 or 20,000 square feet of office space. I don't need to build out to build, you know, 3 or 4 edit bays. You know, I don't need to have freelance staff and room for, you know, another 15 to 18 people to come on. I can really keep this virtual studio going as we really start to build this agency. And I think when we're ready to move into the office, you know, hopefully, you know, March, April, or, you know, February of next year, whatever that target's going to be, you know, we're really looking to kind of reinvent what that space is going to look like. You know, I've got creative directors who are coming on and they're saying to me, they're like, I'm thinking about moving. I'm like, move wherever you want. You don't have to be in this office. Yeah. This office will be here for a couple reasons. We'd love to have you come in for client meetings and for pitches, you know, for brainstorm sessions and working war room sessions. And to get some face time and to get some energy. I mean, I think, you know, working from home is great because I do think you get a lot of benefits from it. I find myself very productive. But I think the one thing I do miss, and I think a lot of other creatives miss, is that energy you get when you're in a room and you're showing your stuff and you're talking about it, you're pitching ideas and somebody else grabs it and kind of adds on to it. And they kind of make it fun and exciting. And you kind of keep moving it around a room and you come out of that room feeling great and energized because, you know, great people are collaborating together and you've got that sense of energy. And I want to have that, but I also don't want to force people to be in the office for, you know, I always say 40 hours a week, but no creatives really work 40 hours a week. It's more like 60 hours a week.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to do that. You know, it's really about like thinking about how a shared office space or reimagining what that office space could look like, just as we're reimagining what that model of an agency could look like right now. You know, when you're walking down the halls of an agency and you're seeing, you know, 5 or 6 empty edit bays, you know, my heart cringes. You're like, oh, that's space and build out and paying for that, even though it's happening and it's tough, you know. And now with, you know, my editors, and I looked at my list, I think I've got like 18 or 20 and they're all set up. They're all ready to go. You know, for me, it's just making sure we get the infrastructure and the pipeline to get in the assets that they can start working on. And it's not necessarily turning into have to make up some of those dollars. So we're able to be kind of, you know, cost effective when it comes to that for our clients. And you think about the entertainment space and you think about some of these digital clients that need some stuff. There's ways to kind of be nimble and smart about the way you kind of think about your structure and how that kind of relates to the client and their budget. So I think it's kind of leveled the playing field in a way, and we're really hoping to kind of reimagine this. And I think people are up for it. And I think, you know, the space is dictating that. And these Zoom calls are, you know, great. And these Zoom calls are horrible all at the same time. So we're taking advantage of that and really kind of finding ways to improve our services as we kind of, you know, grow.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before on this podcast, but it's actually one of the things, this might be a kind of a blasphemic thing to say, but it's one of the things I kind of like about the pandemic is that I do think it's causing this big rethink of the way we work. And I think that's good. I think it needed to happen. So the idea that, like, you know what, people can work remotely. People in LA don't need to commute an hour and a half each way necessarily every day, you know, just... Are there ways to make work even more flexible and accommodating for your workforce? There's no reason why it shouldn't be at this point.
For sure. And I think with, you know, great challenges like this pandemic, you know, it just breeds, you know, innovation. And we're definitely looking at new ways to innovate the agency. And like you said, all that time you get back from your commute, I spend more time with the kids, and I'm able to, you know, have a little more time for fitness and, you know, get my mind in a place where I'm really able to concentrate and focus and stay connected to my clients and to their needs, as opposed to like being stressed out on the phone through traffic, fighting to get there, you know, rushing away from the kids. You know, it's definitely changed a lot of like a work-life balance. You know, you kind of work around that life. And once you kind of get in that rhythm, you can take advantage of it. You know, I find myself around 6 o'clock at night starting to kind of, you know, wrap up and go get the kids into a bath and get them ready for bed and tuck them in. And then at 7:30, I'm back on, picking right back up where I left off. you know, and able to kind of keep that momentum going because, you know, you feel energized from that moment you get with your kids, you know, and mm-hmm. it's like, remember why you're doing all of this.
Right.
And you kind of have that kind of nice connection to it. And it gives you a little bit more of that resurgence to get back to it and, you know, keep going and keep finding new ways to innovate and, you know, be creative and really kind of deliver for your clients.
So one of the things you just mentioned there, it was about being connected. And one of the things that Fathom mentioned when you launched was about keeping your senior team connected to your clients closely all the way through the work process. Can you talk a little bit about that, what you're doing at Fathom that makes that maybe different than the way you've seen those processes work out before?
Yeah. I mean, you know, before there's been, you know, times where it's like, you know, here's the project, here's the creative brief, now go. And it's like, oh, where's the conversation with the client? Oh, somebody else took that, you know, okay. And now we're going to pick this up and run with it. And you're like, you know, I think it works better when you get a chance to really get the creatives, especially the top level creatives who are working on the project on the phone, on a Zoom, together with the client, in a room with the client, and sit the client down and you have a discussion that's free from fear of asking the hard questions. And I truly believe like finding the time and finding the courage to ask some difficult questions really helps the process. Like, why is it that you're doing this show? Or why is it that you want this campaign? Or what's the true essence? How do we really get down and boil this down to find, you know, the true core brand values that makes your network or your product unique in the marketplace? And a lot of that comes from like our understanding and really getting a chance to have questions come from a couple different points of view, as opposed to one or two people dictate, you know, the conversation. How do you really kind of look at this from a couple different viewpoints, you know, with the creatives and really make sure that the creatives are constantly connected to that client? You know, we were working on a project the other day where, you know, the client kind of called me up after. She's like, oh my God, I just love this. It's great. It's like, I feel like you're making everyone around you better and you're making us better. And I was like, oh, that's really sweet of you to say. It's great to hear that. But it's like the client feels more involved. You know, we feel like we're getting to that deeper level, thus the Fathom of that understanding of what's at the core. Why did you do this? Where are we going? What's the real motivation? And how do we open up and unfold all of those layers to really find that right combination of creative, smart thinking that can be proven to work? It's a lot of conversation. It's a lot of time, you know, and you know, making sure that, you know, we're looking to grow organically, you know, with our clients. You know, we don't necessarily want to grow to be a behemoth very, very quickly. We want to really scale this so that the connection is there. The time that we want to creatively develop is there. We want to make sure that we're not rushing projects through, that we have the time and the dedication and our staff has that creative courage to say, you know what? I know this project is due tomorrow. But you know what? What if we reimagined everything right now? Let's not worry about margins. Let's make sure we're really hitting at this for the client and for their needs so that we can really kind of push this thing to a deeper level and get them something that's going to be something we're all proud of. And, you know, it's tough when you're in business to always manage that. And I think one, us being nimble will help. Two, us really being connected to, you know, a strong data source, you know, with the Smith Geiger and the advisory and the experience from them, you know, and all of their consultants and what they offer from their experience, you know, it helps that understanding, it helps that thinking, it helps to kind of pinpoint our creatives to a direction where we're not wasting all of that effort and time developing so we can spend more time, you know, working on the deeper level creative as opposed to the surface stuff that's not going to get you the result that you need.
Just digging into that a little bit, what is it about Fathom that will allow your senior creatives, executives to have the time to spend with the client to work at that level? And also, what will it be about Fathom that will allow people to operate free from fear in terms of expressing their point of view or expressing that they disagree? Why will they have that liberty?
Well, I mean, I think that comes from my creative take. That is the creative freedom right there. You know, I think you can talk to some people who've worked for me, whether it was at FX or Fox or Stars or, you know, Stun or you know, when you think about the way that I work, you know, it's not a dictatorship. There's definitely an environment where I create that it's there to grow creatives so that they mature, that they have development themselves over time, and then they have a safety to be able to express their wildest ideas in a room and not be kind of laughed out of it. You know, it's like, well, let's try something. Let's take a look at it. And if my creatives feel really passionate about something, it's like, let's get to the core essence of what that is. Let's make it work and let's present it. You know, I got no problem with it, as opposed to saying, no, we're not going to pitch that, or no, I don't like that. Let's move on to something else. I really kind of make sure that we foster an environment. If I say I don't like something, I want to tell people why I don't like it. And I want to get more of an understanding of, like, okay, what were you thinking when you presented that to me? Like, so we can kind of figure out what's missing. Because if you're looking at something, you're like, yeah, that's not working for me. Why isn't that working? You know, as opposed to saying, I don't love it. Let's move on to something else or get somebody else in the project. I hate that. I think that just kind of creates an environment of fear. And we really want to create an environment of collaboration and artistry and humanity that really kind of is different than the model that's out there now, which is like, you've got one day to work on this project. And if you're not doing it, we got to move on to the next person. I don't like it. Get somebody else. I don't want that kind of mentality. We want to be selective in the projects that we choose. We want to make sure that we're not taking on every single client and every single project that isn't necessarily, you know, our goal. We want to be selective on who we're working with so we can offer that kind of, you know, fine dining experience, you know, as opposed to, you know, that cafeteria line. We want to have the time to kind of dedicate to the artistry and the craft of it, you know, and that means, you know, a scale, you know, we're going to stay nimble. Like I said, we're going to grow, but we want to be a nimble agency that really can respond well to our creative, our creatives can respond well to our clients.
So it's a lot of it about your own personal leadership style and the kind of the style and structure of the organization you plan to build.
It's that, and it's combined with the way that we will grow our business, as opposed to, you know, I mean, listen, we'll be at the onset, so we'll take on, you know, a lot of clients, but it'll be like figuring out a way for us to select which ones we're going to team with, which ones we want to make sure that, like, we're going to spend time on these. So we want to make sure we're going to, like, let's turn the other work away. I want to make sure that we're not going to be so inundated with work that we're not going to be able to focus on that amazing project when it comes in the door. We want to be able to be, you know, selective and apply that care to the craft that I know we need to really get that result that's going to be amazing for the clients. So it's kind of a combination of the leadership. It's a combination of being selective, and it's going to be a combination of the way that we grow the business.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like your mouth, God's ears, right? That you have enough business where you can say, and also I'm being selective. But yeah, hopefully that, it just seems like a balancing act. Like, hopefully that is the way it goes. But you also, you know, you have to bring in income too. So
yeah, and there's a reality to all of that. You know, it's one thing to be idealistic, and it's another thing to, you know, be opportunistic. So we'll make sure that we definitely kind of, you know, set ourselves up for success and how we move forward with the clients that we're working with. Definitely. There's definitely a balance to all of that.
So I'm going to move into some sort of broader business of entertainment questions. You've been in this business a while. You mentioned you worked at Fox, FX, Starz, and Stun, which is now known, and now launching Fathom with Smith Geiger. As you've been in this business, what are sort of the big trends that you've seen that are really changing and impacting the business right now that you as a marketer and a creative have really had to stay on top of?
Well, you know, I think you look at it used to be back in the day, just a couple of years ago, that your own air was your most important asset. You know, it was a really way for you to kind of extend your reach, you know, to get your GRPs and to really kind of make sure that you're making that impression that you need to. And I think, you know, we're looking at, you know, people not necessarily watching live or not necessarily, you know, viewing, you know, the way that they used to. And how do you make sure that you're serving that message to an audience that may or may not be there? Where do you find them? How do you expand out into digital, into social? You know, how do you really kind of find other avenues to find them and get their attention? And I think that's where a lot of it has shifted. I see a lot of these larger on-air departments in Fox and Starz definitely have a reduction over the years and look at ways to grow it into the different places, you know, growing their social, growing their digital, growing their experiential, growing their events. How do you kind of find people at different places if they're not sticking around watching live, if they're watching the breaks, if they're watching DVR, if they're watching other places, if they're watching on Hulu? How do you kind of get that kind of, you know, space that you used to have when you were doing on-air promotion? You know, the model has changed, thus innovation kind of kicks in. You know, right. How do you find, you know, where your audience is and how do you reach them? I think that's been the big shift. Obviously there's a lot of other shifts going on out there, but I think that's been like the big focus. You know, I look at, you know, the process too of like key art, where it was, you know, back in the day where you would buy tons of like print ads across, you know, Entertainment Weekly and People and all this other stuff. And that would complement your outdoor buy. And, you know, I don't know who's buying outdoor now in the pandemic, if not a lot of people are driving to and from work. And all of a sudden those routes change. But even before then, it's like the outdoor buys for entertainment seem to kind of be going down. You know, the print, you know, obviously, you know, the readership going down. Where are those viewers and what are they doing? How do you create print, which, you know, we still call it print, but it's not necessarily printed. It's a great right. idea. It's a great single frame that you're going to use in mobile and digital and social. And how do you make it move? You know, is it living key art or is it more than that? Is it, like I said, with that preacher piece that we made, yeah. it was a whole story that ended in that key art. And, you know, how did you build up to it? Or how is that the starting point of a story? And how do you extend a great idea past a platform that might be evolving and changing, you know, beyond your control with, say, print or, you know, some of these others that are just not what they used to be because viewership has changed and trends have changed. And I think, you know, obviously, I think we were talking about this before, you know, with streaming is that's kind of been a game changer. I know it's one of your questions before, but, you know, with streaming, it's like you can quickly zoom over everything. You know, do you have to watch the trailers? Maybe you want to watch the trailers. I love watching the trailers, you know, to see what I'm going to watch next. But are other viewers watching that way? And how do you, you know, justify spending that money on that trailer if viewers aren't watching them? Where do you put them? How do you use them? What's your media spend? How do you talk about, you know, creating great video content that can be absorbed across multiple platforms in a digital and social space? So it's really about being smart about what we do. And I think all of us out there, all these agencies are doing great creative work and they're looking for, you know, extensions past the platforms and what that platform might look like in 6 months or what it might look like in 6 years, what's going to be the next new thing. I still think what you have to do is you make amazing creative and then you kind of adjust it for the platform as opposed to saying, you know what, we're going to create something specifically for TikTok, go. It's like, I think you want to create something that's amazing, you know, first, a good solid idea that's got great campaignable elements. And then you can go, you know what, how do we apply that to TikTok as opposed to reversing it? I want to make sure that, you know, when we start to approach stuff, it's like the core elements will always be there. Great design, great storytelling, and great execution. And then you start to think about your extensions of it. You know, mm-hmm. a great print ad doesn't always make a great outdoor piece. Outdoor needs some different parameters. It needs different scale and size and different ways that you're driving past it at, you know, 35 miles an hour. It's got a different level of engagement. Is it retail or is it, you know, is it more awareness? And I think you want to make sure you're kind of looking at that. And when you open up a magazine, if people still do that and you look at that print ad in the newspaper or a magazine, like you're closer to it. There's a different layout to it. But you're going to have that kind of same campaignable idea. There might be a different layout and there might be a vertical and a horizontal and a different way to do that. But how do you kind of take that great core idea of an AV, you know, or a campaign that's working with different elements and work it into the different platforms through social to really make sure that you're extending the story, that you're doing great storytelling through using great design, great execution across the multitude of platforms. And I was just really kind of using those elements as metaphors to get there. But it's fun. It's exciting. It's always changing. And by the time you start on a project, maybe the platform changes at the end, but you know, it's definitely a rapid moving industry. And, you know, we're looking to, you know, make sure our clients can be successful out there with great thinking and strategic ideas that we know can work and how we can adjust them for the platforms that they'll be on.
Do you feel like when you take the creative and you put it across platforms and outdoor and print and now in all its many forms, when you aggregate all that, do you end up with the same GRPs, the same reach that you would have ended up with 5 years ago on a network's own air?
I don't know if I can answer that specifically, but you know, from my point of view, you might even reach it further when you think
about
it.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. Like if it's even better, actually.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even at Fox, you know, we were really just buying outdoor in like New York and LA and really just speaking to the industry and making sure that that industry was, you know, passing it on for us. And now you've got the opportunity to kind of go at people, go at influencers, go at different people who can pass it on for you, still use your press, still use your different channels and the channels that you always had. But I think you've got a chance to actually extend it even further and to target more of who you want. So, you know, as opposed to like outdoor, who's just targeting everyone who drives down Olympic Boulevard, you know, right. Here you got a chance to pinpoint, you know, audiences, you know, exactly who you want to go after. So I right. think there's nice correlations there to make sure that you can align it and maybe even get, you know, greater return because, you know, you are targeting a little bit more specifically.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting point, I think, in that there's a lot of hand-wringing, right, about the decline of linear television. But the flip side is that, A, there's so much opportunity right now in so many different services and sort of, somebody said earlier today, infinite choice, and all these platforms, these different ways to reach people. So, you know, you could bemoan the departure of the past or you can be excited about the future. I don't know. I just think it's not necessarily so bad that things change.
No, I mean, listen, I mean, I think it's great for the viewers. It's been awesome. I mean,
oh, it's great for the viewers, so yeah.
Great TV. And I think when you look at it, you're like, well, how do you view it? I mean, I love watching all this stuff and I love seeing all of this and I love having the choice and I love not having to watch different promos when I don't want to.
I like promos, but
yeah, but like, you know, and some of these trailers are amazing. And listen, I feel like the industry, you know, has really propelled, like, there's a lot of amazing short form, you know, people out there who are cutting some great, amazing things. And God, I mean, who of us don't sit down once in a while and just, you know, you're watching almost a half an hour worth of great trailers. And you're like, I don't have to see the series. I love the trailers. It was, that's a great way to kind of watch it. And there's a great art to that. And, you know, we were doing the campaign for Perpetual Grace on Epix. And
That was a great campaign. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And, you know, that's where we really kind of lined up with the whole tone and the sensibility and how that extended itself to print and outdoor, to our AV, to some live action spots that we did, to the digital campaign. And that's how we really kind of connected everything was tapping into that tone. But it all kind of started with the way that we really dove into understanding the scripts and applying this amazing trailer that really brought out the sensibilities of Stephen Conrad, who wrote that series. And it was an amazing series. And I'm sad that's no longer on. Great cast, Ben Kingsley and you know, Jimmy Simpson. But it was really amazing. And we work really great with the Epix team to kind of create this trailer. And the first time it went to the network president, the first time it went to the showrunner, they said, this is approved. And I was like, what? Approved? Like, we love this. This is great. And you know, Neville and I showed up on from the print side. We showed up to shoot the photo shoot for the key art in New Mexico with the cast. And Jimmy Simpson came up to me and he goes, "You guys cut that trailer. That trailer was amazing. We love that trailer. Oh my God, you guys really captured the show. Can you cut the series for us?" I was like, absolutely not. I mean, no, I think there's a different sensibility, you know, and that was a thing of like really looking at, because we started cutting from dailies and we were reading scripts and we were looking at the way that this series was crafted. And it was a little bit different. It definitely had a different tone. I kept waiting for like other coverage to come in. Like, where's the close-up shot? Or where's the reverse in the close-up? And where's the other shot? And we never got it. So a lot of these interesting conversations were from far away and from behind. And I'm like, oh, damn, that's what he's doing. I get it. Anytime a con man's talking to a con man or there's some interesting kind of like lie or someone's not telling the truth, we're never close up to it. So we can't quite tell. And there's this kind of like voyeuristic, just away, just out of the kind of, you know, inner circle of what's happening, that the, you know, the showrunner and the DP were kind of going for. And once we kind of understood that tone and that vibe and that feel, we really kind of got on board with this Western noir and just ran with it. And that was really kind of like our guiding light. And we used that, you know, through everything that we did, from, you know, the really cool print scenes that we created that felt like they were really authentic to the series. And they had to be authentic to the series, you know, and Sir Ben Kingsley, you know, dictated that, you know. It's like, I remember we were shooting him. He's like, I would never pick up that shoe. I'm like, okay, great. Don't pick up the shoe. Well, it's not in the script. We won't do it. It's like, I get it. And it's like, you know, shooting him was amazing because I don't think he ever broke character once on set. And You know, it's like you get into it, you find the vibe, you find what that nuance is, and you stay true to it and you commit to it and you exploit it, you know, for your benefit, knowing that it's going to live on a lot of different platforms.
Have you ever had talent compliment you on a trailer before? Is that common? Does talent usually watch trailers?
You know, this was for the TCA that started it, and then this turned into be their consumer campaign too. So they watched it because they were really excited about it because they hadn't seen it. They hadn't seen any assemble. They haven't seen the pilot because the pilot wasn't ready. So I have had, you know, quite a few compliments in the past, but this was really nice because, you know, Jimmy Simpson kicked it off, and then the others kind of came up, and it was really kind of nice to get that. And I think because we understood the show so well that there was this inherent trust at the photo shoot too. And it's that kind of like deep level connection to the clients that we're looking to really kind of harness and create those environments where you can do that and kind of make that connection and be creative and, you know, really kind of get on the same page of making something amazing. And, you know, when the cast responds to it, it's great because they're putting in the same energy and effort, you know, even more so because they're living there and they're in the characters and they're in those moments and they're doing it for a long time. So it's great to kind of get that trust, that level of trust when it comes to creative, for sure.
Last question. And I think this you've touched on, but I'll just ask you to as a sort of sum it up kind of question, which is it seems like you're doing this, so I'd be interested to hear what you say, which is how do you recommend that people, and particularly entertainment marketers, capitalize on this time of change and disruption?
Well, I think it's like you've got to dive deep, you know? I think viewers, I think consumers, I think people can feel when something doesn't ring true, it doesn't ring authentic to a series, to a campaign, to a brand. They can feel it. So I think mm-hmm. you got to make sure you don't force anything. So you got to dive deep to a different level of understanding of what the showrunner is going for, what's going to be different. How do you kind of get into that kind of mindset and that thinking of that series? And then if you're going to shape or shift it as it kind of moves out into your campaignable assets and then out across different platforms, how do you kind of like keep that tonality, keep that vibe and that essence of what you're creating, of what that feel is, of what that series or that campaign is going to be. And then how do you let the environment kind of mirror back so that it's accepted? Meaning, how does that trailer, making sure that you're, or that AVPs get a little bit of the head start when it's playing in the digital space? Or are you front loading the information? So in case no one's watching past 8 seconds, they're still getting title and tune in and a little hint of it. And maybe the next time they see it, they might be inclined to watch it. You know, so they're not being left in the dark, like, what did I just see? Or are you really kind of, you know, understanding that maybe we don't have this be so audio heavy because people might be watching without the sound. How do we create something that's visually stunning that's going to intrigue them to turn the sound on? Or if they don't, does it still work? And I think it's like looking at all of those components to kind of keep moving forward. And like I said before, it's like, you got to rely heavily on the assets and the thinking that got you there in the first place. It's great storytelling. That's never going to change. It's great design. That's never going to change. It's all of the other assets that, and all the other platforms and all the different ways that people are going to consume, content, watch content, whatever they're doing, how they're seeing it, how they're serving it, how we're going to reach them. All that stuff is going to change. Those key moments don't change, you know, great stories, you know, takes you back to like, you know, storytellers just sat by the fireplace telling great stories. We still want that. We'll still crave that, even though the platform from, you know, sitting in front of a fire telling stories to sitting in front of your streaming, you know, service, you know, it's changed, but it really hasn't changed. So make sure you're kind of connected to that and stay true to that connection, because after all, that's really what we all do.
Well, it's a good place to wrap. Michael, thank you so much and congratulations on launching Fathom. We're super excited to see what you guys come up with.
Oh, thank you so much, Paige. And thank you, Promax, for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk soon. Thank you, Michael. Bye.
You got it. Talk to you. Bye.
That's it for this episode of the Daily Brief podcast. If you don't already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have comments, questions, or ideas for conversations, please feel free to reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org. And as always, thanks for listening.